Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers.
Physics teachers like me, Robin Griffiths, a full-time teacher of physics all the way from year 9 now through to year 13. I've lost my year 8s.
And physics teachers like me, Thomas W.P., a part-time A-level mostly teacher of physics, a little bit of year 7, doing light at the moment, more on that later. So Robin, why have you reduced your teaching load?
I've reduced my teaching. Yes, well, I've become head of sixth form, so I'm sort of moving into that. It's a slightly strange role, head of sixth form, because it's kind of bit pastoral, bit academic, bit recruitment, bit of everything, really.
Well, congratulations on your promotion. Well done.
Yeah, kneel before me. I'm senior now.
Hey, yes, senior exactly. Citizen. A senior citizen, yes. Finally, you admit it.
Man.
Finally,
yes, admit it. Indeed.
So we were just talking offline before we started. We're both feeling a bit tired, aren't we, with the CAGs, the centre assessed grades, and the marking load and that.
And you know what? It's not so much feeling tired. I'm just feeling a bit sad for my exam groups because, you know, what is... Yeah, usually. I mean, it's a difficult time of the year for them usually, but they're desperately insecure about this setup, and it's all, you know, last minute and being made up as it goes along. So, and I think they sense that. So I think they're finding it tough, and just the sheer quantity of assessments that they're having to do, I think they're finding quite hard as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 2 weeks and then we're into another exam. But what I'm finding frustrating is that we're not allowed to discuss it with them because we're not allowed to discuss the process. So I can't give them feedback about how they're doing. I can't even say to you how they're doing on the podcast because I know one of them listens occasionally. Mm. I find that frustrating because I think you can be reassuring and you can be motivational. I mean, I've got kids, having a chat with them would make a big difference. So I'm finding that frustrating.
Yeah.
Done a lot of marking. Those paper threes.
This is the thing. Assessing isn't teaching. And that's the thing. You know, doing exams is not a job we're used to doing, and so it's a different thing. And this is why I'm sort of, whenever I speak to colleagues who are finding it hard and I can see their bitten nails, I'm just saying, look, you know, this isn't our job. We're being asked once again to pull it out the bag at the 11th hour, and we will, because we always do, but, you know, at some level, don't worry too much about it. It's not what we do.
No, and I'm looking forward to getting the rebate from the exam boards for the photocopying, the massive photocopying load we've had, and the little payment for marking the exam papers. I think I may have a long wait.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that. I've sort of spent it already, as you may have guessed, on some snake oil. No, but yes, it's unlikely.
Frustrating,
to enough, isn't it?
Frustrating. Anyway, enough whinging. Let's get on something a bit more positive. So yeah. I do have my year sevens. And they're quite a sweet little group. And actually, I had a full attendance this week. Every single one there. I think that's the first time it's happened. And I just wanted to talk to you about the joy of the simple things, Robin. I'm teaching light and colour with them at the moment. I just love teaching that. And I don't know if it's because I am distantly related to Sir Isaac Newton. Seven greats half-uncle. Anyone interested? He's my seven greats half-uncle. I just love teaching colour. I love it. And I went to my technicians, because I haven't taught you seven here before. I said, oh, can I have the light boxes? Light boxes, they said. Light boxes. I said, you know, boxes like a shoebox with the full face of the top side covered in a colour filter and then objects inside of different colours for them to detect. Colour boxes, they said. So I spent a while explaining how to make them, which they were very willing to do. And then they found them. They just didn't know they existed. They found them in the back of a cupboard.
How much physical equipment is sitting in the back of people's cupboard? I mean, there was a guy at IOP we used to challenge because he knew every bit of physical equipment ever. Robert Burke, his name is, and he just says, if you've got a piece of physics equipment that you don't know, get in touch with the IOP, get in touch with Robert Burke, and he will tell you what it is for and how it works. I guarantee you'll never beat him.
Well, that is a challenge, isn't it, for the dear listener? So get in touch with the IOP, or indeed, it would be good to do an episode on mystery objects, although putting photos in the podcast would be a challenge. But if you want to share a mystery object with us, you can email us, contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
Yeah, we could get Robert on. We could actually do this. We could show Robert the pictures and everything and see what he reckons. It'd be good.
Yeah, and it's a very good visual medium podcast, though. Yeah, they found the boxes and sent me a photo because I wasn't in that day. And we modified them a bit. And we were talking about what could we put inside, because it's always a bit hit and miss, the different things in different boxes that I've found. And they hit upon this brilliant idea of six bits of Lego. So we had a white, a black, a red, a green, a blue, and a yellow bit of Lego. Mm. And the same six bits in each of the boxes. Honestly, it changed what has been for me a fun exercise in the past. just looking at them and guessing to a really good, challenging, problem-solving lesson. You know, what is the colour of that brick? You know, I had taken photos beforehand, so I let them wander around and look in the boxes, and then we put them on the board. And I said, you know, well, this one is black under red, and it's black under blue, and it's green under green. Yeah, what can that possibly mean? I really enjoyed it, and the three kids who got it really enjoyed it, but it was testimony to my terrible teaching. The 26 kids were a little bit confused.
Yeah, testimony to your terrible teaching. I think if one of them gets it, I'm pretty happy. But no, what a wonderful thing, and it's a great thing to do, because with so many of these things, showing and understanding are very different things, and it's a little bit abstract, that whole idea of light, but that's a really great way of bringing it to life, isn't it? Just you take these Lego blocks, put them in the box, explain to me why they look like they do. I think our friend of the podcast, Lewis Matheson, does something very similar on his colour video, which we'll put a link in the show notes for. But I think he uses Lego as well.
Lewis has done it. It'll involve Lego, and I'm sure he's done one. I'm sure we'll put a link in the show notes. So I love those light boxes, and making it a challenge was really fun. I'll tell you what, they produce another bit of kit for me from the back of the cupboard, which I'd only seen out on an open evening. I hadn't even touched before. It was a way of showing mixing the primary colours of light. So the three lights in the corner, a triangular block, a light in each corner, and in the middle is a tetrahedron, which rotated. So you could either have it pointing and picking up the primary colour of light, or you could rotate it a sixth of a rotation, so the face of the tetrahedron was picking up two colours of primary light.
Right.
So it was either red, green or blue, and then you do a little turn and you got yellow, cyan and magenta.
Wow.
And that was brilliant. But then when they showed it to me, they were showing it to me horizontal, and I was thinking, this is hopeless. You can only see one colour at a time. And I noticed it had a hook for hanging on the wall. And it's obviously from, you know, our school was made of a merger of two schools from the 50s. I bet this was hanging on the wall in the physics lab for 30 years. And now it's kept in the cupboard. But hanging it vertical just changed it immediately into this amazing object with all of the class can see the three colours from all across the room. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we've just we've got one of those rather lovely. How to describe it? Best way to describe it is just to say, look at Lewis's video, because he's got one. But it's basically three coloured lights on a kind of stand, three different corners of a triangle, and they shine through an aperture. And then you can block one of the lights, and then the other two will combine to make the secondary colours. And then if you have all three lights together, that they'll cast a shadow the other side of the aperture, and you'll be able to see the white light in the middle.
Yeah, we had that where we used to work together, actually. We had that. Yeah, we don't have that at my place. We do have this amazing tetrahedron device. I'll probably use that as the tweet background, just so people have an idea what that looks like.
That is a very nice one.
I wonder, there are so many things we teach with just everyday stuff that all schools have. There's a joy in it somehow, I was thinking this week. It's quite nice being on home ground, if you like, with Year 7, having been teaching them a bit of biology.
Yes, no, I think that's right. I think there are some lovely things there. One of the nicest things I ever saw, which I always thought was great fun, was making jelly lenses. You sort of have this clear jelly substance. And you can cut it into different shapes, obviously, and you can cut it into lenses and basically use lasers to shine through. You can even combine a red, a green and a blue laser if you want, and bring them together to make a white dot in the middle of the screen, things like that. Or you can cut weird and wonderful shapes and see what that does to the refraction. And it's really rather wonderful. It's just another angle on the whole idea of refraction, another way just of being creative with it. So jelly lenses, that's another one. I'll put a link in the show notes to a video on it.
I was going to say, is that the jelly I get to make jelly at home, or is that some special jelly?
I think it's a special type of jelly, but I think you can buy it on Amazon in kind of bulk, and it fairly straightforward stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I love teaching light. I really like just giving them a lens and getting them to hold up a piece of paper and capture an upside-down image of the back of the room or the windows of the room. Just the really simple things. In that one, they can all have a lens to do that. This week, I did it with the visualizer. Yay, plus one with the visualizer. They had a full-size version of it, and they were all standing up and jumping around. And then they realise it's upside down, and that's fun as well. And that realisation
it is a bit of a wow moment, isn't it? That one where they make an image on a piece of card for the first time. One of the things I always love about that is you just say, okay, hold everything where it is. Now just move the card out of the way. Is the image still there?
I'll tell you what I like doing with that. I forgot to do it with my sevens. Is okay, one of you hold the image, make the image. Right, now cover half the lens with your hand. What will happen to the image? And they all think they'll get half an image, but they don't. They get an image that's not as bright. I like that.
That is a nice one.
I'd use that with GCSE, though, probably more rather than sevens.
There we go. Now, we promised ourselves what we'd do is when we talked and blathered on about stuff we do, that we'd have a quick recap for people just to say, okay, so, you know, what have we talked about? What can we do? So we've had the idea of your light box, which is basically just a closed box with a filter in the place of one side, pretty much.
Yeah, and a red, green or blue A4 sheet taped over the lid of a box. What we use is just the reams of paper boxes, and we cut it down so it was the height of the lid. That's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Then cut a hole and put a film across it.
Cut the hole, put the filter across. Then you can put different colour objects in there, and particularly if you use primary colour, red, green or blue objects, you get this idea that anything that doesn't match the colour of the filter tends to show up black.
Yes, and yellow's good because everyone has a yellow Lego brick, and then that will show up as black under blue, and will show up green under green and red under red. And then black and white also to stir the pot as well. They're fun because white will look the same colour as the filter, and black will always look black. So it's a really good way of doing it. And if you do that with the three primary colours of light, that's great. You can get magenta and cyan bricks, I think. In fact, I have on my desk here Particle Physics Brick by Brick by Dr. Ben Still, friend of the podcast, and he uses those colour bricks in his demos for particle physics. So you could use, if you had them, and you can get them, magenta, cyan and yellow filters, and you could add more bricks. And in my boxes, I had the same colour bricks in the same places with numbers. And I also had the colour of the light written, but in an opposing colour. So the green box, it was written in red and it appeared black. And then when I took the lid off at the end, it was all woo.
Yes, now that is very nice. Isn't that lovely? So we've got that sort of idea of, and you can see how that would, you can challenge them then into this whole idea. Well, explain, you know, explain what you've seen. How does that work in terms of primary colours, in terms of secondary colours? Why does the yellow show up under two colours, but the red only shows up under one and things like that? So you can kind of build that understanding there, which I really like about that.
Yes, and the way I used it was I was quite formulaic. I got them to write red, green, blue for each of the positions and write down what colour they saw the brick in those three positions and then their conclusion of what colour it was underneath. So I made a process for them to do the analysis.
Nice. It's really nice. So moving up the age bracket a bit, we started talking about lenses. And lenses, I mean, to be honest, I tend to find the whole idea of mucking about with lenses works pretty much from any group from year nine upwards, including A-level. But basically getting yourself and I've got to get these the right way around because I can always get them wrong, convex lens. Yeah, so a biconvex lens, that's the one, isn't it?
Converging is another way of saying it.
A converging lens or a biconvex lens, these are all words for it, but basically these are the teardrop-shaped lenses, I guess you call them, the ones that bulge on both sides outwards. And you can work with those and use those to actually make real images on pieces of paper. So if you play around with one, usually if you hold this, usually somewhere in the region of 5 to 10 centimetres, if you hold the screen 5 to 10 centimetres from the lens, isn't it, I think, you produce an image there, and that's quite a wow moment.
It really is. I mean, they come with ours come in an envelope, and it tells you the focal length on the envelope. So ours were 15 centimetres. So yes, if you hold a piece of paper about 15 centimetres away, a distant object will form an image on that piece of paper, and it really is a wow moment. And you can, as Robin says, if you take away the paper, you can make them think, what's happened to the image? I'll let Robin answer that in a minute. I'd be interested to see what you say to them, actually. I'm guessing you'd say, yes, it's there, but it's not there. I'll let you answer.
It is a bit like
I'm really interested what you say to that, because I wouldn't dare ask that question. But what's really interesting to me is if you cover half the lens, you don't lose half the picture. You get a less bright picture because all the light from the window is going through the lens and being focused onto that image. You're just cutting out half the light when you cover half the lens. Go on, Robin. Where has the image disappeared?
So usually I say, yeah, I'd say that the image has disappeared. I'd say the light is still there and the light is still focusing to a point there, but there is no screen, if you like, to capture the image. So therefore, we'd say that there was no image there. But then, of course, you could put the screen back and say, oh, look, and there it is. But the key thing to that it gets them thinking about is the idea that the light and the light rays and the light rays sort of intersecting, if you like, coming together, converging, that is still happening even if there's nothing there to pick up that image.
Yes, and I enjoy teaching lens diagrams, and I think a lot of people, non-specialists I work with, have problems with that. A bit hard for the podcast. But my eureka moment there when I was teaching and talking to people about it is that the kids don't appreciate just that if the sun is shining in the sky on a daffodil, the light is coming off that daffodil in any number of directions, an infinite number of directions, but you can draw the lens diagram with just two, the one parallel to the central axis and the one through the middle of the lens. And I think when you appreciate that there's an infinite number of rays coming off, but with just two, we can simplify it down to just two. I think for me, that's the thing I emphasise, and I think it does help the kids.
I've seen some horrendously unhelpful diagrams of the way light travels through lenses in textbooks in the past, because they constantly munge the ideas of ray diagrams, as you've described, you know, a couple of rays coming off that you've particularly selected because they do predictable things from the infinite number that are coming on, and then sort of things that try to capture this idea of an infinite spread, and you know, the lens only picks up the ones that are incident on its surface and so on and so forth, and they're confused and oh, it's just terrible. So I think sometimes textbooks can lead you a bit astray here, but it is a very simple thing, really.
Yeah, a parallel one will go through the focal point and then out beyond where it will meet the one that's gone straight through the centre of the lens.
And there's something rather lovely, and it's one of those mindful activities, isn't it, that you get, because it's almost like colouring in, isn't it? Right? Because once you get into the rhythm of what you need to do and the different types of rays and their rules, you could do them all day. Sort of.
Yes, and then you can do it for a diverging lens. The one that's like a capital I, if you like. Concave lens.
A biconcave lens.
The listener can't see me waving my arms in a beautiful curve.
Made the sign for a Doric column or something. I don't know. It's all getting very artistic.
Yes.
But so that's light at that level.
Yeah, but the important thing, though, with a concave, you cannot capture an image on a piece of paper with a concave lens because the image is not there. It's an image your brain conjures into existence in that position because that's where the light appears to come from. But it has never come from that point.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. It's one thing I do when we do, because you always do reflection before you do any of this. You do reflection first. And I often try and get a decent-sized mirror into the lab so that they can look into it. And I sort of usually put a post-it or a pencil mark or something, or pen mark or something on the actual mirror surface and get them standing quite close in front. And I say, now look at your reflection in the mirror. You've seen that before. You do that every day. Where are your eyes focusing? And ask them, they'll say, it's focusing on the mirror. And you say, okay, so you focus your eyes on that post-it note. What happens to the image of your face in your peripheral vision? It goes out of focus. You say, okay, now focus on your face again. What happens to the post-it note? That goes out of focus. So you're not actually looking at the mirror. You're looking through the mirror, the same distance behind the mirror as you're standing in front. And that gets them used to this idea of a virtual image in a much more familiar way, I think. Because it's basically, you say, well, look behind the mirror. You're not there. There's nothing there. It just appears that there is an image of you there. And that's a very, very familiar thing to them. So that's a much more familiar way, I think, of them getting the idea of a virtual image.
Brilliant.
I know I probably get lots of pedantic physicists probably telling us that's not a virtual image in the true sense, but I think for getting them used to the idea that they can, if you like, see things that are only appearing to be there, I think it's quite useful.
Yeah, I love that idea. And the thing I have to resist when I teach Year 7 about mirrors is that Feynman conversation where he poses the question, if it reverses left and right, why doesn't it reverse up and down? Which is a really nice question, and I wouldn't ask a Year 7 that.
No, I wouldn't. So what's the answer to that one then, Thomas?
There is a video on YouTube of Feynman explaining it.
You look in a mirror, and let's say you part your hair on the right side. Then you look in the mirror, and the image has got its hair parted on the left side. So the image is left to right mixed up. It's not top and bottom mixed up, because the top of the head of the image is up there at the top, and the bottom of the feet is at the bottom. And the question is, how does a mirror know to get the left and right mixed up and not the up and down? You get a better idea of the problem if you think of lying down and looking at the mirror. All right, your hair is still on the left side, and now the left and right was the up and down, whereas the up and down, which look okay, was the right and left before, and the mirror somehow figured out what you're going to do when you're looking at it. So what to describe in a sort of symmetrical way what a mirror does, that it doesn't look lopsided, that it takes left and mixes it up with right, and it doesn't do the same with up and down. And after a lot of fiddling, you gradually, we worked out the answer to that one. You see, if you wave this hand, then the hand in the mirror that waves is right opposite it. The hand on the east is the hand on the east, and the hand on the west is the hand on the west, and the hand that head that's up is up, and the feet that are down. Everything's really all right. But what's wrong is if this is north, your nose is to the north of the back of your head, but in the image, the nose is to the south of the back of the head. So what happens really in the image is neither the right nor left mixed up with the top and bottom, but the front and back have been reversed. You see, that which is the nose on the thing is on the wrong side of the head, if you want to. All right? Now, ordinarily, when we think of the image, we think of it as another person. And we think of the normal way that a person would get into that condition over there. It's a psychological thing. We don't think of the idea that the person has been squashed and pushed backwards, forwards with his nose and his head, because that's not what ordinarily happens to people. A person gets to look like he looks in the mirror by walking around and facing you. And because people, when they walk around, don't turn their head for their feet, we leave that part alone. But they get their right and left hands swung about, you see, when they turn around. And so we say that it's left and right interchange, but really the symmetrical way is along the axis of the mirror that things get interchanged. Well, that's kind of an easy one. A harder one, and very entertaining, was what keeps a train on the track?
But it is lovely. It's a lovely topic, Light, and it's a joyful one, as you say, because it's there's so many little tricks and things that you can show that are at once familiar, but at once something they've never seen before, which are rather lovely, like, as you say, you know, coloured bricks appearing black, right through to images of the windows on a piece of card, through to, you know, mirrors and thinking why are you not flipped vertically as well as horizontally, and so on and so forth. So yeah, lovely topic.
Oh dear, yeah, Light. I just the joy of teaching joyful things. I mean, I love the questions the kids start. You know, it's one of those topics where they have year sevens have a lot of questions about. You know, typically, I can't think of any right now, but I had hands up the whole lesson. Oh, so does, and I just, you know, sometimes there's a place for that. It's a lot of fun.
I love that. No, because I remember that's a constant, it's a bit of a bugbear for some teachers because, you know, you're trying to get through some content and the kids are asking questions all the time. And the best tip I ever got from that, thank you to whoever it was, and I really can't remember who it was, so I would name check you if my memory was better, but they said, if you've got a really, really questioning class, just tell them that you're going to do, you know, 3, 4, 5 questions each lesson or whatever it is, and you will definitely answer 5 questions. But if they have a question as they go along, they have a special question space in the back of their book, and they should just jot it down. And then, you know, at the end of the year, usually year 7, you can carve out a lesson somewhere and you say, that will be the question lesson where everybody gets to ask a question. And you can literally just go the whole lesson with them answering. Or even better, get them to send them through to you in advance so you can actually pick out some of the best ones and really go for it on an explanation. So that was a nice tip I got.
Yeah, that is a good tip.
Thank you to whoever it was.
That is a good tip. So many people have good ideas, don't they? So many people have good ideas.
Great tips come from all sorts of great sources, and thank goodness they do, because otherwise I would have no teaching, because all my teaching comes from tips from other people. It's the way it goes. And that's in one way why we started this podcast, to try and share those tips across the teaching community, this particularly the physics teaching community, whoever you might be. So if you do have any tips, if there's any good things that you would like to celebrate about the joy of teaching, do get in touch with the podcast. And you can do that via Twitter @PhysicsTP.
And you can go to the website, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com. And there's a contact form on pretty much every page. And it's quiet this time of year. I mean, I think you can tell with the podcast how slammed people are, because we're tired and there's no one's contacting us to say they want to come on and talk about X. And there's for me, the Twitter seems quieter as well. I think everyone's just flogged at the moment.
Yeah, I think it is what it is. So we'll... we may, yeah. If we do, we may do shortened episodes. We may do take a break. But don't worry, we still love you and we will be back.
Three more at least.
Three more at least.
Till maybe an elegant end of the podcast, or maybe we become even more intermittent. Because the 3 episodes, it's episode 100.
Yeah.
The ton.
Ton up.
Will it be ton and done? Maybe a lot of people hope it will be ton and done.
Yes, exactly. But that's getting on for 3 years worth, so I think that's fair enough. There's plenty of back catalogue there, people.
Yeah, everything has to end sometime.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Robin. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks indeed, Thomas. I will catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast. The podcast is presented by me, Thomas WP, and Robin Griffiths, and produced and edited by me, with Robin doing the show notes. Please get in touch if there's something you want to do. It might be the last few episodes, it might be your last chance. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.